Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another edition of CMC Radio. I'm your host, Rob May. Hope everyone's having a great week so far. We are at Tuesday of the work week, and it is 6:30 p.m. here on the East Coast. And again, we got some good weather. Finally feels like spring and summer are getting on their way here, shaking the cold and all that good stuff. And I hope everyone's got some good plans coming up for the rest of the week and for the weekend that we have ahead. Not to waste any more time, but joining me tonight and very excited to have on the show, Dr. Linda Groff. Linda, welcome to the show.
Hello. Nice to be here.
Well, it's great to have you, Linda, and I should say that this is part one of a two-part series that we're doing with you, and getting right to it, Linda, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay. Well, I grew up in Michigan. I went to the East Coast for graduate school, and I started teaching down the West Coast. I've been teaching at a California State University for about 40 years, but I have now finally retired, and I'm working on I'm doing a lot of writing right now and also talks, workshops, consulting. And, those are my focus at the moment. Yeah.
Very cool. Now you mentioned that you've been writing, right? So what is it that inspires you to write?
Well, because I've been teaching for like 40 years and I've put a lot of ideas together. I'm a big picture person, so I like to try to create frameworks where you interconnect a lot of things and see how they're changing over time. So I've been working all these years in about three or four different fields, which one is future studies, and I'm working on a couple of books on futures and evolution and change. So, you know, what are the main things driving change? And futurists tend to be big picture thinkers. You know, they look at how things interrelate over time. And,
sure.
And change is also accelerating today. So it's putting a lot of challenges for everybody to try to keep up and see how they can understand all this change and relate to it in their own organization, apply what they need to change and so on. And then I've also done things for many years on peace and conflict resolution, nonviolence, and so social change things. And then the third area I worked in for a long time also is intercultural communication, interfaith dialogue, and how that's an important part of the world today because all the diversity of the world is coming together. So we have to figure out how we relate to each other in positive ways and sort of get the best gifts of what each cultural tradition can give to humanity as a whole today, sort of how I look at it. And I've been interested in consciousness questions too. So I've been, I'm kind of interested in too many things for my own good, but all these things tend to have a global focus and they're all interrelated. They're all very interesting topics, to be honest, and they all impact everybody's lives. So that's
absolutely. So, but why don't you take us back a little bit though into kind of your youth and growing up and what kind of got you going into this direction? I'm curious to know if there's people or events that kind of influenced that decision to follow this path.
All right. Well, that's a good question. What happened was I grew up in Michigan in a small town kind of, and then went to the University of Michigan. And then while I was there, I decided I wanted to go and get some kind of international experience. So I found a program called Experiment in International Living, and I went and lived with a family in Austria. It was German-speaking that summer. And then the following summer, I went to Harvard Summer School and took a course from Carl Deutsch in International Relations. And I think those two summers changed my life. Because out of that, I was majoring in English at the University of Michigan, but suddenly I totally shifted to international relations, which was I got two MAs and a PhD, but that, opened up new worlds, different countries, different cultures, different histories and so on, and made it real by getting to travel. And then I took a course on international relations at Harvard the next summer and did very well. So I got a very nice letter of recommendation that helped me get into graduate school. So it's funny that just like two summers could have a really big impact. And then after I went through all my education and finally got a PhD, I started teaching. And then I started adding a few other topics to my repertoire. So I discovered future studies, which is a field that I really love. For many years, because it deals with change in all kinds of different areas and how they interrelate. So So futurists are always looking at impacts of new technology, social change, new thinking, and just tending to be more whole system thinkers. You know, often in the U.S. and the West, we divide reality into all these separate parts, and we don't see how they interconnect. But futurists are big, tend to be big picture thinkers often, and so that I really like. And so I've been doing future studies for years, and especially a focus on global futures issues, and then evolution, which is, you know, kind of a specialized part of that that I've gotten into quite a bit, and which is very big picture, because I don't just look at biological evolution. I look at physical evolution, biological evolution, evolution of culture and learning, evolution of technology, evolution of consciousness, you know. And so, you know, my thesis on that is that the world is accelerating in the rate of change today. And change is happening in all these different areas of our life. And, you know, so it's really, it's overwhelming for some people, but people have to try to understand it. And once you understand it better, you see more opportunities in change, which I think is also really important to empower people. And then also I've done peace studies, which is also sort of a sub-area under international relations for many years. And my late husband was in peace studies all his life and always did some futures, and I did future studies and some peace stuff. So then we, you know, when he was here, he's passed on now, but we started, you know, doing some work together with a lot of overlap of our interests, which was nice. It was very nice while it lasted. Anyway, and then I've also done intercultural interfaith, and I took 21 students to Japan one year through California State, from 21 students from different California State University campuses, and I taught in Japan, and I've taught in Europe, I've taught in Canada, I've taught in the U.S., but I taught, you know, I was in charge of all these students, and it was fascinating to me that, you know, Japanese culture and U.S. culture are like, you know, they're both modern technological on the surface, but under the surface, the culture is almost like polar opposite. So I've taught courses also for years on intercultural communication, interfaith dialogue, and peace, and I've got wonderful examples of, you know, like interaction issues between U.S. Japanese culture, just as an example of East-West thinking. So I'm interested in worldviews and mindsets and, you know, what are the frameworks people are coming from, and are there some new frameworks that might help people deal better with change, all that type of thing. So does that help?
Now, I'm curious to know then, so you when you were a professor, and how long were you a professor for?
Well, for about 40 years at least.
40 years,
and,
wow, okay.
You know, well, yes, and at the end it was half time, and then I taught at the University of British Columbia and Fresno State at Cal State Fresno for a year. Those were 1 year jobs, and then was at Cal State Dominguez for, you know, cumulatively about 40 years. Yeah.
Now while you were a professor, and obviously, you know, I'm assuming that, you know, you're teaching different things that you're very passionate about. Who or what were some of the books or people that you shared their knowledge of to your students?
Well, all those fields ended up teaching in, which is one is future studies, and another is peace studies and conflict resolution, and the third area is intercultural interfaith. And interfaith and intercultural are related, but they're not always the same. I mean, there are people in each of those fields, you know, and originally, what was interesting when I was in graduate school was there was, you know, all my models were men. There weren't examples of women doing this stuff. And I think I'm part of some transition generation that started to start doing this stuff too. And so, so that was an interesting thing as well. Yeah, but some of the original people that I looked at were Carl Deutsch and Marshall Shulman, but I don't know if anyone would know what that means, but those were international relations back, you know, and then I moved on more to future studies. So,
as your professional career progressed, you know, were there things about what you were teaching that you would question? I mean, how did you kind of stay in touch with what was happening? Because it sounds like obviously you covered a lot of different things.
Right, person. I like Bucky Fuller was a famous futurist. And he used to say, I'm a comprehensivist.
Okay.
You know, we tend to educate people in very specialized ways, But, you know, to be honest, that's why I love future studies, because it was big picture. And then what I've done with peace studies is also a big picture version and intercultural interface. So I seem to have a mind and brain that wants to put a big picture together. But we don't always educate people that way. But then when you get a big picture, it becomes interesting to people, you know, because you see how different parts kind of fit together. So how did I do that? I guess I just gravitated. I mean, I have a passion for, like, understanding different cultures, different worldviews, figuring out how we're going to, you know, one of the things I say is we have to figure out how we're going to learn to live together on this planet, you know, in a way that we don't destroy it and blow it up. You know, we need to preserve it, preserve life. We need to empower people. There's all kinds of people in the world still living in poverty and not quite getting a chance in life to develop their human potential, you know.
Right.
So, and we need to unleash people's creativity, their innovation, all those types of things. We need to take care of the earth from which we get our food, our energy, our resources. We wouldn't be alive without it. But in the West, we often tend to have this kind of separate mindset that we're separate from nature. So we try to control it for our own ends, or we're separate from each other. We have individual identity. We're separate from God and Spirit on high, as opposed to really seeing that everything is really interconnected. And I actually think that a lot of the problems in the world today that we need to solve, of which there are many right now, require an interdependent worldview as a foundation for that. You know, if you think you're just separate from everything, you're not going to feel, you're not going to be aware how much everything really is interrelated and needs to be taken into account.
Well, now, can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, I have this thing I did on cultural stuff where, well, look, we're interdependent with the earth, okay? We're interdependent with each other. I mean, no matter what you think, you know, we do have, we're separate and interdependent. Actually, the model I like the best is what I would call complex whole systems thinking, which is that everything, we, you know, in the West, we need to go back and realize that all our separate parts of our lives are actually interconnected and try to figure out more how that is. But, you know, sometimes I was in Japan for a year, and sometimes there they have such a group mindset that they could perhaps use a little more individualism. So, you know, different parts of the world have different challenges. But I think that the model that I call complex whole system thinking, so if you look at the world as dynamic, interdependent, and changing, you know, but it has diversity in it. You know, complexity means diversity, that, you know, it's not like we're all pablum the same. We're not. We have different individual personalities, and we have different cultures and so on, different faith traditions, et cetera. But all of that still needs to be within a bigger context, that these are evolving within a bigger, you know, interdependent context. I mean, I think that's, you know, if you look at the earth, there's many species, right, that are interdependent with an ecological systems. If you look at cultures in the world, we have many cultures today, and now everybody's interacting with each other. So can we create some bigger systems where we can deal with each other in more peaceful, positive ways, not just, you know, in conflict or things like that?
Now, with Global Options and Evolutionary Consulting, is this, I mean, this is obviously the primary focus, right? It's spreading the knowledge that you have.
Right. And it's, you know, I did teach all these years, and what I'm doing consulting on now and writing and so on is all based on the stuff that I was teaching all these years. So that's why I'm now, I mean, I've published about 75 articles, but now I'm trying to get them into book form. And it's just based on, you know, getting out on paper all the stuff I put together all these years. And so, you know, I have two evolution features books and two peace books I'm working on. One of each is my own, and one is an edited one. So I can talk about that if you want later.
Sure. Yeah. Well, you know, the questions that I have, you know, as far as for now, you know, I'm curious to know, did somebody help you, you know, put this all together, the writing aspect of things? I mean, you know, because it's a lot of... No, okay.
No, but I mean, I go to a lot of conferences in these different fields, and I have a network of colleagues I know around the world in future studies, peace studies, you know, intercultural interface dialogue. And so by just staying in touch with things like that, you kind of stay up to speed with, you know, and then plus I go on my computer every day and read articles and, you know, get journals and books and stuff. So, you know, you just, but it's my own synthesis. But, you know, it certainly draws on many other people, but, you know, I can't say someone else told me exactly
Of course, of course. Now, what organizations are you a part of that, you know, people can check out and find out some more information, obviously, about this?
Well, there's several futurist organizations. And again, futurists deal with change. They're trying to understand change and what is driving change. And another thing about future studies, by the way, that I love is that, you know, most academic disciplines, they teach people to study the past and the present, but not the future where we want to go. So
right.
Futurists are doing this very strange thing of trying to get people to more clearly look at what kind of future do we want to create, and then are the trends taking us in the direction we want to go, and if not, how do we change that direction so we can create, you know, a more positive future for people on the planet or in their communities. And so, you know, that part of future studies to me is also very, you know, important thing that it adds. You know, some people poo-poo future studies because they say, oh, well, how can anyone study the future because it hasn't happened. But, you know, there's a way you can't. You know. But futurists are also not trying to predict the future. They're trying to show different alternative futures that are possible. And that, you know, and to empower people to get clear on what they want to create so they can put their energy and resources in that direction more so that they will get a better outcome of what they'd like. You know, but it doesn't just say there's only one future or all or anything like that. Or but the organizations, there's a World Future Society in Washington, D.C., or Bethesda, Maryland, kind of relocated. It's been there for a long time. That's the main U.S. futures organization. They have annual conferences. There's a World Future Studies Federation, which is global. You know, you have to be invited to be a member, and I've been involved with that for a long time. They tend to have conferences every couple of years, but they're due for another one now, I think. And then there's another group that's called Association of Professional Futurists, and those are a lot of people who are professional futurists working in the field, and I've been part of that and fellow in that as well. So those are, you know, and I know a lot of colleagues through those different organizations, which is great. And then
cool.
And people that, you know, from different countries and everything. And then there's, in terms of peace organizations, there's an International Peace Research Association. I've been quite involved with that and chaired a religion and peace commission co-chaired a religion and peace commission for years and have been on the board of that different times. And there's a local, a U.S. one called Peace and Justice Studies. That's changed its name over time. But the IPRA one, my late husband used to be one of the heads of secretary generals of that organization at one point. But I got, you know, quite involved with it too. But there's, and then the intercultural, there's a couple, you know, there's a intercultural organization I'm not quite up to date on. And then there's, for interfaith dialogue, there's a Parliament of the World Religions. And they just had a conference in Salt Lake last summer. And then there's also United Religions Initiative, and they're set up to try to help people have dialogue between different faith traditions so that people can increase their understanding. And, you know, and the bottom line is people don't agree on everything, but they can find areas of common ground, which is important
right.
for creating a better world with more understanding. So
absolutely. That's a very interesting concept, though. I mean, obviously, in today's world, and I would assume in the future as well, it's heavily important for that understanding to be there, right?
Well, if it's not there, people tend to get in their own, you know, in their own little group, and it's like living within a box versus seeing there's another world out there. The world is becoming so interdependent because of technology, trade, economics, everything, that we just have to do that. And plus, we live in an age today where technology is powerful enough to destroy us all if we don't wake up and get our act together and start acting more responsibly with each other and the planet, you know? So it's
absolutely
very important. Yes, very important that, and part of that is we've got to understand these issues better and understand different cultural faith traditions on the planet. And, you know, there's a concept of the first and the second axial age and interfaith. The first axial age was when the great religions arose a long time ago. And at that point, the idea was that when they interacted with each other, they tended to stress more their differences. So it would create more conflict, basically. And today, people are saying that maybe we're in the second axial age of the world's religions, where when people come together from different faith traditions, they're all also seeking some areas of common ground. And for example, all religions, you know, are spiritual in some way. They believe in some version of God, divinity, something. They also, you know, believe that there's light that, you know, that behind religion is light and love and or compassion, something that connects us all. And they actually almost all say they believe in peace too, but then you have to get into what that means. But to, you know, to different groups. But there are, you know, a few. I've been involved with a lot of interfaith because I think it's important today, and it's one. But it's an extremely positive experience because, you know, if you're open to it, because you meet people of all different backgrounds, and you can. It's not about leaving your own tradition. It's more about enriching it by encountering other traditions, and then maybe learning some things from their traditions that you might even be able to incorporate in your own tradition. So it's not about getting anybody. It's not about converting anybody or trying to, you know, get people to leave their own tradition, but to you know, to have some positive encounters with other traditions. And, you know, it's a positive experience. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. And I do think that, again, tradition, I mean, the values of tradition, the effect of tradition, I mean, it all kind of plays into history, I mean, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, people live, I guess, their values and their traditions and so on. It's just that I think, you know, here's another take on things, and this is kind of a futurist one, but humanity was first hunting and gathering, right, in different, we had little bands, and then we had roving tribes, you know, and we had go around and look for food and so on. And then people began to have settled agricultural communities, little villages at first, okay? And then after that, people got, you know, you had the rise of ancient civilizations and then started to have ancient empires and so on, but they got more sophisticated technologies and so on. And later we had feudalism, and then we got the rise of the nation-state system. And what we have today is also increasing global interdependence and larger regional groupings, and we're beginning to leave our home planet to explore our solar system and the universe beyond. So my theory is that humanity keeps organizing over time at bigger system levels, you know, and part of what connects us on bigger levels is partly technology too, you know, but the challenge is that whenever you go through a transition period, you know, let's say from the industrial age to the information age, right, or beyond, and there are certain vested interests that kind of control the industrial age who don't want to give up their power, so for them they're going to probably resist change, and then there are other people on the forefront of change that are ushering in the new age. And so, you know, they're more open to change and leading it. You know, so, I mean, I happen to think, you know, on the planet today, we're going through another one of these transitions, you know, and a lot of our institutions, I think, are not working well. I mean, you know, and people are polarized politically, and, you know, it's just, and some people are threatened by globalization because they don't see where they fit in. And then other people, you know, are interested in it, but they think it's more inequality, which isn't good. So, you know, there's a lot of issues today that people are having to deal with. And it's part of another period, I think, of a big transition on the planet. And everybody's also much more interconnected. You know, there was a time when whatever happened in the United States would really just, you know, have a big influence on the rest of the world. But it's because of interdependence, again, this theme of interdependence, you know, what happens anywhere in the world can come back and affect other parts of the world, including us. So, you know, it behooves us to see the world that way, I think, if we want to understand what's happening.
Sure, yeah. Absolutely. And do people, you know, do you have a network of people that support the work that you have been able to put out so far as the publications go?
Yeah, I mean, I've published about 75 articles of my own, and, you know, I get articles from journals that have articles from other colleagues in these fields all the time, but I did just edit, this might be interesting to some people, I just edited two issues, special issues of a futures journal called World Future Review, and on the theme of future human evolution, like where are we going, what are our options, where we're evolving in the future, and my, you know, I like evolution, some people have a problem with evolution, they don't believe in it, and they reject science, I mean, I'm not one of those people, so evolution, there's a lot of evidence, you know, we had the first, the origin of the universe, and it evolved, you know, through long periods of time, and then eventually we got the Earth, and then eventually life emerged on the Earth, and you got biological evolution, and then through all different species that evolved, you finally got humans emerging, and then, you know, we started creating technology and social organizations, culture, and so on. And then I think the stage after that is, you know, there's a big debate now about what the stages are. There's some people just focusing on technology, but And technology is driving change a lot, but there's important technological issues we need to be dialoguing about in the world today that are going to impact people. But there's also consciousness. You know, people can wake up consciously and start to become aware of all these things and start to act more consciously in the world, and so that they are also more responsible in their actions and so on, and are working more towards creating a better future for people. So we could say we're co-evolving, you know, as a human species with all the other species on the planet. By the way, many other species are endangered today. And some people think we could be in the fifth mass extinction of species on the planet. And if that's true, that's huge, because we have no idea the impact that will have. But if you have an ecological system and you start pulling out different species that have built up over time upon each other, you know, that has big consequences. And there are many animal species today. Because, you know what, this is an important concept. There's a new term that people are using called the Anthropocene Age. And people are saying that this is a new geological age that we have entered, and they have finally kind of decided that maybe it started around 1950. But we used to be in the, Pleistocene, I think, the age before. But the characteristic of the Anthropocene Age that we're now in is that humans have taken over so much of the planet, and we've dominated it so much that many animal species' own habitats are threatened. You see, so they're being pushed back further and further, trying to survive. And it used to be that you'd have a bigger division between like human civilization and wildlife, you know, wild areas for the rest of the species, other species. But now those are all breaking down. And so the idea of this is that, you know, if we're going to have all these other animal species be able to even survive, it's going to be because humans decide to put aside areas of land and territory so for those animals to have as a habitat. I mean, we can't just assume it's naturally going to happen anymore, because we've had such a huge impact on the Earth. And so that's another kind of responsibility that humans need to start looking at, because all these things that are happening, you know, can reverse trends, but you got to first be aware of what they are, right? And what's happening.
Absolutely.
if you want to deal with them at all. And, I mean, so we're really kind of in this very interesting age. A lot of our institutions, which I would argue are products of the early industrial age, even though we've gone on to the information age, and we're developing a lot of technology, genetic engineering and stuff, and we're also doing, you know, going to space and all kinds of things, and all of those are creating different possible futures. But we still have a mindset sometimes back in the industrial age, and we really, again, you know, we have to start thinking more interdependently if we want to solve all these challenges today that people are facing.
Well, really, the truth is that the world is always changing, like you've been saying, I think, right? I mean, there's no real stopping it. It's just you have to understand it, and you have to adapt to it and move forward with it. Otherwise, you know, there's catastrophic consequences, I would think.
Well, you're just going to have more difficulties eventually. I mean, as I said, people sometimes resist change because they're overwhelmed or they don't understand it, and so on. But the world does keep changing, and the planet keeps changing, and humans keep evolving and changing. And, you know, all of it, I mean, I've just finally actually come to the conclusion that everything in the unit, that evolution is embedded in everything in the universe. You know, it's not like you can get out of it. I mean, look at, you're born, you're a child, you're a young person, you're a young adult, you know, you get married, have a family if you want, whatever, have jobs, you get older, you eventually pass away. I mean, that's evolution right there. You're not staying in the same place forever, you know, and sometimes we delude ourselves. I think that we can, but the truth is, and actually evolution today is accelerating. I mean, I think if you look at agricultural age, well, hunting and gathering, agricultural age, industrial age, information age, or so on, all these different periods, you know, each one seems to be happening faster than the previous one.
Sure.
So that's alarming, maybe alarming, but, you know, it doesn't give you, you know, and then here's another interesting issue.
Dr. Graf, Linda, I'm sorry. We are running out of time for today's episode, unfortunately. We only have about 15 seconds or so, so I don't want to cut you off in the middle of a thought. But I'm glad to say we do have you coming back on next Tuesday night, 6:30 p.m. here on the East Coast. All right?
Great. So keep a balance between some quiet time and your activity in the world. That's my last point.
Sounds good. Well, everyone, please check out lindagroff.net for more information. And again, we'll be back with Dr. Linda Groff next week, Tuesday night at 6:30 p.m. And from everybody here at CMC Radio, this is Rob May saying we'll see you soon. Have a great night, everybody.